quite well. She's still in hospital. She's now eating, breathing, and speaking. And they're hoping, and she's hoping, that she can get home soon, but they're not quite prepared to release her from hospital yet. So continued prayers would be appreciated, that they will be able to find that she's well enough to come home, to come out of hospital soon, because she'd like to be home, and her parents would like her to be home. But she's doing well, she's eating quite a healthy amount, and I think her parents are very grateful indeed that God has taken her out of the critical condition that she was in once. Her dad told me that basically the doctor said she hasn't a chance, you know, she won't survive. But he said, really, prayer is your only answer. And prayer certainly was the answer. Well, as we meet this afternoon on the banks of Loch Lomond, there will be, how many, 150 or 200 people also meeting in the main marquee, having a service, the final service of SEP this year. I don't know who will be speaking, but I would place a bet that it's probably Mr. Henderson is the main speaker, and you will have others there without sharing experiences. And then after the service, they will have dinner. And then after the dinner, they will have awards, special awards for campers and staff and so on for this year. And then after that, usually the tradition is they have a sing-along, and people get into the coach if they're going back by coach, and they travel back overnight this night, or the remainder will come back tomorrow. Don't know if you've been following it on the internet as to how it's been going. There's been a daily report on the Facebook page for SEP Camp, and it has been one of the wettest years ever for SEP this year. It's been one of the wettest years ever. They've had mud, first week and second week. And I suppose the rain probably hasn't helped the midges either. And yet, they've managed to get together, they've managed to work through it. Yes, it's been discouraging at times, but most of the program has been able to go ahead. It hasn't put things off. They've kept going, they've done the activities, they've had a wonderful time, and especially at night, they've had special activities, they've had a lot of fun. And they've basically overcome the problems, the difficulties, and I suppose, all right, it wasn't pleasant at the time, having all that rain, having some flooding in places to deal with, and yet they've been able to get through it. They've pulled together, they've worked through it, and they can go home, I'm sure, with happy memories. You probably know that Ricky Fowler broke an ankle earlier on in the camp, and he was all plastered up, and yet he continued to serve as a dorm leader. And so in some special awards that took place last night, he was given an award for courage, for continuing to serve effectively as dorm leader. And of course, if we know Ricky, none of us is at all surprised by that, that he would continue to serve as a dorm leader, an inspiring dorm leader with a broken ankle. So it's good to know that. It's good to know that in spite of the problems, both the campers and the staff can still carry on and still have a good time and still get through it. This is, of course, that time of the year when children and family get together. We go off on holiday usually, or we have a picnic in the park. And I know during the holiday time, that's often the time when we go away and we go somewhere special and we have happy memories. I know in my family, a lot of our memories are from the holidays where we've gone somewhere special and we've taken photographs and we've done unusual things. And we have a lot of happy memories from those times. Most of our photographs are from those times when we were on holiday. And you can see the children enjoying it, having a lot of fun. And it's just good to be part of that and sharing in the fun with them and sharing in the good times. And the same with SEP. Everyone's having fun. There are some special crazy activities, which I'll leave you to find out for yourself. And they enjoy that. It's good fun, happy memories. The sad thing is, though, that not all children have happy memories. Not all children have fun. Not all children have a decent childhood. So this afternoon, I'd like to look at that. We live in a world, as we know, increasingly, where sadly many children die young because of serious diseases or because of war or terrorism. Those who survive may survive as orphans. The older ones, perhaps, are lucky enough to make their way across Africa and the Middle East, where they can join a boat to sail across the Mediterranean and land in Greece or Italy without parents, without documents, as orphans. Not much of a childhood. those who are left behind, the boys, are almost enslaved into an army of some sort to defend the country, to fight, and the girls are enslaved in a different way. Not a nice future for a lot of the children in the world today, and we can't pat ourselves on the back in the UK either. Some of our children get killed, they get knifed, they get mown down in accidents, some are murdered, some are abused. We have a growing, appalling history of abuse in this country, which is slowly, painfully being unfolded. Whether it is abuse by a city of immigrant people who thought that they could get away with it, or whether it is abuse by people who are well set up in society who feel that they have the authority to get away with it, and yet they don't, and it's exposed, or whether, perish the thought, it's abuse by their own parents or their own relatives, and they are left permanently scarred by those experiences, and it changes them, and they have no more trust in adults anymore because of those experiences. And so it falls to organizations like the Kids Company and thousands of others in this country to pick up the pieces and to try and mend the mess. And so I'd like to pause this afternoon and invite us, sad though it is, to ask this very difficult question. Why must children suffer? It's hard enough to ask the question, why must men or women suffer? Why must adults suffer? That's a hard enough question to answer. But harder still is to answer the question, why must children suffer? Young children, innocent children, why must they suffer? That's a very, very hard question to answer. But I felt that we can't just avoid questions like that forever. We can't just duck them. We have to try and square up them a little bit and see if we can chip away at it round the edges and see if we can't shed a little bit of light on this very difficult question. The trouble is, we are so besieged by problems in the news almost every week, which include children, that we almost become hardened to it. We almost don't notice it anymore. Unless, of course, it's a very large-scale tragedy. And we've had our share of that in this country. One of those occasions was on the 13th of March, 1996. A man named Thomas Hamilton, former scout leader, got into his van at 8:15 in the morning in Stirling in Scotland and drove 5 miles to a town called Dunblane. He went into the school there, the primary school, armed with 4 pistols, which were all licensed, and with 743 cartridges of live ammunition. He found his way into the gymnasium with his handguns, and he started shooting at random. Not content with wounding many children and adults and killing a few, he then turned on those who were wounded and lying on the floor and shot them point blank, killed them. When he'd had enough, he turned the pistol on himself and shot himself dead. Those were a few terrible moments, just a few moments of pandemonium in the gym in that school. And it ended up by a total of 32 people who were wounded. 3 adults, the rest were children. Out of that total, 16 were killed, which included one adult and, sorry, there was one adult and 16 children killed. The others were able to recover eventually from their wounds. And of course, the other children who were involved in that would have had psychological wounds, which would have needed extended counseling and support and help. Nightmares, recurring nightmares, who knows how that affected them. And of course, Dunblane itself, the town of Dunblane, was really in shock for weeks. The whole nation mourned. There were special services. There was a lot of support at the time. And it must have been extremely difficult for those who were affected by that. Very, very hard. Those who weren't directly affected, and some of those who were, asked the question, in a Christian country, How could God allow this to happen? How could a loving, all-powerful God allow such a thing to happen? Innocent children killed by a gunman. How could he do that if there is a God? And if, as you say, he is a loving, all-powerful God? How could that happen? A number of people wrote in to the church at that time. And amongst them was a young man who wrote in a letter, and he asked that question. His letter was passed on to Mr. Jones, and since I lived in that young man's area, he passed the letter on to me. And he said, "Why don't you go and see him?" Well, how would you respond to that challenge? Well, I didn't have any ready-made answers, but I thought, if God is with me, then he will help me. So I went to see him. I don't remember exactly what I said. I do remember the situation, a young man living by himself in a flat, and he had, in this big lounge, he had bookshelves, he had magazines stacked on the side. He had The Plain Truth, which was the very reason he wanted to ask the church about this. And he had two big television screens, one on top of the other. He was watching the news all the time, different news channels. It was his obsession. And having watched these news events on television and seen it live, of course, he wanted answers. Why could a loving God allow such a thing to happen? Well, I did my best to try and answer some of his questions. The fact that, of course, we are free moral agents, and God isn't going to take away our free will, our choice, our ability. And I also said, look, you haven't asked enough questions. I could ask some better questions than that. What about Bethlehem, just after when Jesus was born? Don't you remember that after Jesus fled with his parents to Egypt, Herod sent his troops in there to slay all the little boys who hadn't even got to school yet, if they had a school. They were less than two, and they were all killed, not by handguns, but by the sword, I imagine. All of them. And probably more than 16 altogether. And God didn't stop it. And that's not the only incident. If you wanted to look throughout the Bible, there were other examples of little children who died or who suffered horrendously or who starved to death, and God didn't stop it. Why? Very hard to answer. Very difficult. The theologian and most Christians would say, well, the world we're in, all the mess, all the pain, all the suffering is basically the result of sin. Man going his own way. We are free moral agents. We make our own decisions, and often our decisions are wrong decisions, and we suffer the results. And basically, that's basically and broadly true. But that doesn't necessarily explain the situation to the individual and why the individual suffers. And so I would want to guard against making that broad statement, whilst, of course, sin is broadly accountable, and evil in general for a lot of pain and suffering. You've got to just take that with a slight pinch of salt. For example, in John chapter 9 and verse 1, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And so the automatic assumption by the disciples was that this man must have sinned, or his parents must have sinned, to have been born blind, to have this major tragedy, this major disability, blind from birth. Well, we have many disabled children in our society today, severely handicapped, some from birth. Was sin the cause of that? Would that be the answer? Jesus said, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life." The work of God. And it depends what translation you're reading. I'm reading from the NIV. But essentially, that God is glorified in due course by how it all works out. That's a better purpose, a better reason. It still sounds like a strange reason. If you want to go through this in some detail and go through some of the discussion and enter into some of the understanding, you could do worse than read the book called The Shack. It was written a few years ago by William Paul Young, an American. His book was a sellout, especially in the Christian community. And it was the story of a man with three children in Canada who took his young family on a camping holiday into the wilderness in Canada. He was distracted one day by, I think, his son. His son got into difficulty and he went out to look for him and rescue him. And whilst he was there, he left his young daughter alone playing by a lake. I can't remember all the details, but essentially that was the case. He didn't expect to be away long. He wasn't away that long. And when he got back, she wasn't there. She'd gone. And he searched everywhere for her, and he got up a huge local search. She wasn't found. Disappeared, abducted, murdered. And he was totally distraught. He blamed himself, of course. It's an extremely painful experience, as you can imagine, for a father to lose his young daughter and feel he was responsible. He hadn't been watching. And yet this author, this Christian author, takes him through the situation, through the experience. No, his daughter doesn't come back to him. No, she isn't restored to life. No, she isn't healed. So how does he address this? How does he address this tragedy? The pain, the loss, the guilt. Well, he encounters Jesus. And Jesus and the Father and the Spirit take him through a number of experiences, a number of lessons, very gently, very slowly. And they're wonderful lessons. And they reveal things about God and his purpose and his ways that are very good to think about from a different perspective, a broader picture. I'm not going to go through the book today. I'm just going to encourage you to read it because it is very helpful. It is possible to go through that and just see how God might tackle that situation and that tragedy for someone who is looking for answers and goes to God for answers. But that's all very well for Christians to be able to read a book like that if you already have a degree of faith. But what about non-Christians? You've probably heard the name of Stephen Fry, a comedian, show business personality. Not long ago, he was interviewed, and his interview was televised, went on Facebook. And at one point in the interview, he was asked about his faith. And he changed. He was no longer the laughable, affable comic that he tends to be. He got very angry. And he said, "If there is a God, I cannot, will not believe in a cruel, sadistic God who allows infant children to die of cancer." That was his sincere belief. It got some publicity. It was in the newspapers. The Archbishop of Canterbury responded. But it, I think, is typical of a lot of approaches, a lot that lies behind atheism or doubt in this country. When there is such pain and suffering, especially amongst young children, why doesn't God stop it if he's a loving, all-powerful God? Very difficult. And you know, I have to be honest, I haven't got a complete answer. Perhaps if I were to give you a cop-out answer, I would say it is one of those mysteries of life that we probably will never completely plumb in this life, but we will understand one day. Now, I could walk away there and say, that's the answer. But it's not fair. Of course, there are a few things that could be said, a few strands, and that's really all I've got. Perhaps not more than a few crumbs, just to guide us, to help us in our thinking, to give us a bit more of a structure for thinking about this problem. I don't think we'll ever win an argument with people over this situation. I don't think we ever will. So I wouldn't get into an argument. It's not an intellectual argument, and so it is not something that we can use in that way. But for us as Christians, how do we stack it up? How do we manage this? How do we live with this phenomenon that is here in our world today, growing all the time? Okay, I'd like to make a general principle. and then I'll follow it with three specific points. General principle, and this is a broad principle, please. First of all, God does not cause evil. Now, you probably think that's stating the obvious. But when there's evil in the world, God did not cause it. Now, he allowed it to happen, yes. He didn't prevent it from happening, yeah. But he didn't cause it. He knew it would happen, but he allows it to happen. So he didn't cause the evil. He often, usually, doesn't prevent the evil because it was free choice that caused that in the first place in many cases. Or it was some other reason. He doesn't necessarily prevent it. I use the word carefully here because I think there are times when he does prevent the evil. But by and large, a lot of the evil in the world is there because God didn't step in to prevent it. But, and this is the point, I believe God is overcoming and will overcome all evil with good. The principle for that is in Romans 12. Romans 12. Romans 12, the last verse, is addressed to Christians, of course, and it simply says, a verse we're probably familiar with, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Now, God's servant wouldn't be asking us to do that if God himself wasn't doing that. And that is, I believe, how he works. That he will overcome evil with good. And that essentially all the evil in the world, all the disasters, all the pain, all the tragedies in the world, God is greater than all of that. He is better, stronger, more loving, more good, in a sense, than all of that. And he will overcome it. Jesus has overcome. He will overcome. And God's in the business of overcoming. He shows that he is greater, not by intervening to stop it necessarily, but by letting it happen, let it work its way through with all the pain that it happens, and yet in the process of time and in the way his plan works out, to show that it will be sorted. Sorted in a way that will turn everything right side up, and that will give glory to his name when people see how he works and how he rescues us and how he works through situations that appear dire, drastic, impossible. Man cannot solve it, no, but God can and will. And so that's the principle I would like to say, that basically God is overcoming and will overcome evil with good, even the most impossible forms of evil that we cannot countenance. There's another verse we might look at in Romans 8 whilst we're in Romans. Romans 8, a more general statement in verse 28. Romans 8, 28. "We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him," in the NIV. Other translations say all things work together for good to those who love God. And the principle is that God is working things out for the best for those who trust him. And ultimately he wants everyone to be in that position where he can work on their behalf to work everything out for the best, to turn things right side up in their lives, no matter what pain they've been through, no matter what loss they've suffered. Now that's something for us to remember. It's something for us to hold on to. I know if I had been there, if to lose a young child, a small child, is probably the worst thing that could ever happen to anyone. And I don't honestly know what I would say to a parent. To a parent there in Dublin, I wouldn't have words. There are not words to say. There just aren't words to say that would encourage, that would give hope. With a loss, an experience like that, really, there is nothing you can say. You can just try and share the suffering, try and support, try and encourage the person through that situation, help them to get through it, because words are not equal to that kind of pain and that kind of suffering. But set apart from it a little bit, as we can be today, we can try and see a little bit of the big picture. Moving on now, here's one point to mention. Many years ago, I think it was in the the day 1960s, I can't put an exact day on it, but there was an American singer called Perry Como, and he sung a song which went like this. When you are the father of boys, how you worry. But when you are the father of girls, you do more than that. You pray. I always remembered that because I thought, yeah, that. And eventually, when I became the father of girls, I thought, you are dead right. You pray. Because, I mean, if when he wrote that song, back in the 60s or wherever it was through then, because of the situation that children were having to grow up in those days, how much worse 50 years later is it today, the situation our children have to grow up in, the pressures they're under, the distractions, the temptations. Very difficult. There are many dangers out there, many pressures. And what can we do about it? You worry, but you also pray. You also pray. And so we do pray, but hopefully not when we've just got into an emergency, not when things have finally got on top of us, but regularly praying, praying all the time, praying to a God that we know and have a relationship with through Jesus Christ, and teaching our children also to pray as they grow up and to pray to God regularly. So hopefully we are praying. God has to be involved in our parenthood. This is not a sermon on parenthood, by the way, but it is a point that will help us to see how to cope with this situation with our own children, in our own families, as we'll come to it in a moment. Just to help our understanding and our faith, it's good to realize and remember that in God's eyes and in Jesus' eyes, all children are special and are precious. If they're precious to us, they are precious to God as well. They are special. They are precious. Matthew 18. Matthew 18, you probably remember, quoted this earlier on a little while back. Jesus looked to little children and said, "Unless you change and become like little children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Then he went on in verse 10 to say, "See that you do not look down on one of these little ones. For I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven." That does signify that God regards our little ones as being rather special and rather important. That their angels in heaven have access to him and are close to him. And in verse 14 he said, "In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost." So God cares about our children. And that's perhaps a good place to start, to realize that God does care. They are special to him. They are special to him. Not only that, he promises protection. He promises protection. Psalm 121 is just one example of many I could read. You're probably at home with many of them, but let me just take one as an example. Psalm 121. God is faithful. Psalm 121, verse 1. I'll just skip through it fairly quickly. "I lift up my eyes to the hills, from whence my help does come from. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over you, your coming and going, both now and forevermore." And if you've been counting, you probably noticed that it said, "watch over" 5 times. So if you needed emphasis or repetition, you certainly got it there. There is no mistaking the fact that God watches over us, and even more, our children. So I think we have that confidence. But does that let us off the hook? We can say, "Oh, it's all right, well, God will look after it. I can go off and do my thing." No, it doesn't mean that. It just means we can have confidence towards God that he's on our side, he's on the job, he's keeping an eye on our children. But, you know, we have a job too. We have to keep in touch. Psalm 34, verse 7. Now, starting at verse 6, this poor man called, and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. But look at verse 19. A righteous man may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. You know, children are a blessing. The Bible tells us that they're a blessing. They're a blessing from God, a very special blessing. But you know, at the same time, they're also a test. Yes, they test our character, they test our patience, and they test our faith. They test our faith. And we understand as parents that we're there to help our children grow and mature and develop, but perhaps we don't always recognize that almost unconsciously, by the nature of being children, they are helping us to grow and develop too. So children are not just a blessing, they're also a test, a means by which we as parents grow and develop in various ways. And I'm sure all parents here can identify with that. And one of those ways is in faith. In faith. When things go wrong. Or even before things go wrong. Remember Abraham? He was the ultimate example of faith in the Old Testament, right at the beginning. He waited patiently for many years. God promised him a son. Nothing happened. He tried his own solution. That wasn't what God had in mind. And then eventually, against all odds, he had a son. But that wasn't the end of the story. After that miracle birth of a son, then some years later, God said, take your son, your only son, the son of promise, and sacrifice him. And Abraham turned around and said, you cruel, sadistic God, how can you possibly ask me to do such a thing? No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Abraham did it. He went ahead, as we know, because he acted in faith. He knew what God was like. He understood God's nature. He knew that God was sound, reliable, faithful, and that God had promised. And so he went ahead, understanding from that basis. Coming back to Psalm 34, it's important to realize that we do have many problems. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, it says in some translations, but the Lord delivers him from them all. I've come across that in our own family, with our own children, on several occasions. I remember one occasion many years ago when our youngest, Gemma, was quite small. I think she was about 2 or 3. And we'd gone to the seaside for a day, and we were sitting there on the beach. I think Faith and I were sitting on a chair, one of these seats. And Gemma climbed onto the railing behind us, one of these typical seaside railings, heavy-duty rail that runs along the border of the beach. And she sat on there and watched as her older sister played around. So we took our eyes off her for a few moments, and then just a few seconds later, there was a scream. And we turned around, and there was this woman behind us who had seen Gemma lean back and fall off the railing, down onto the concrete, on her head. And this woman screamed, because she knew that could be fatal. Or if not fatal, then extremely difficult. We went to pick her up, and she was completely unharmed. Completely unharmed. Now, God could have intervened and prevented her from falling, but he didn't. She fell, to teach us and her a lesson. But thank God, he saved her. He delivered her from any injury. We are extremely grateful, because we could never have lived it down afterwards had she had serious injuries. What about her sister? Well, Katie's always getting into trouble. Don't tell her I said that. She's always getting into trouble. A recent event was, about a year ago, she got her first car. She'd been saving up for it. I helped her to sort it out and get it going and so on, recommended by the AA and so on. It seemed a very sound car, and she started driving it to work. So she was driving in every day from where we live on the edge of London, driving into Shepherd's Bush, working in Westfields in the car. And she noticed that the brakes weren't as good as they should have been. And one morning she set off, and the brakes just were not working very well. And after a little while, nothing. No brakes. No brakes. And she decided to drive on, She knew that she was covered by the AA, but if she called on them when she was close to home, they wouldn't come out. So she drove on. And she was panic-stricken, I know, because I got her text. Dad, what now? I don't know what I said to her in reply, probably pray hard, but I texted Martin Ryan and said, please pray for her, because, as you know, he, for many years, had a driving school. He understands the reality very clearly. And he said, yes, I will, immediately. And we prayed too. She drove on through the busy morning peak London traffic from the edge of London into central London by Shepherd's Bush, parked her car in the car park, and then called in the AA. The AA man came along, took one look at the car and said, you should be dead. You should be dead. And she told me as she drove that she was praying constantly. And she got there, she made it, and we were extremely relieved, to put it mildly. And so God does watch over Israel. God didn't intervene to prevent that experience. She could have discovered that the brakes were not working when she was at home, when the car was parked safely outside. But no, the brakes failed when she was on her way to work. And she had to drive all the way into central London in the rush hour. Yes, she used the handbrake and the gears, of course. But it wasn't an easy experience, and she will never forget it. And so the point is, from our children's point of view, prayer is important. And God, many of the afflictions of the righteous, including the afflictions our children go through, but God delivers us, especially when we're praying, when we're in regular contact with Him, and when we know that He cares, and we know that He will intervene and He will help. The second point is that, in a sense, that is a valid point for Christians who have enough faith to pray regularly, and who know the Bible and know its promises, who will pray accordingly. But what about people who are not in that situation? How would you answer them? How could you help them? And I would say this. God reveals Himself as a Father as well. And the Bible reveals that He also had or has a child who was born as a little child, who grew up as a young man, and grew up into adulthood. And he was rejected by the people he came to reach. He was turned away. And God knew all along, and He knew all along that this would happen. But His Father sat there and watched as His Son was rejected and despised and submitted to the most ignominious torture and horrible death. And if it was hard for Jesus to go through that, and it was, I believe it was harder still for His Father to watch. Impossible for a father to watch his only beloved Son go through that. Why did He go through that? Because through that, God changed everything. Through that, He can now overcome evil with good. That price has been paid. And Jesus can now rescue the world from bondage. He can enable people to make a new start, a new life. More than that, thankfully, a few days later, Jesus rose from the dead. He came back to life again. And in so doing, He gave all humanity a hope and a future. Without taking the time to read it all, let's turn briefly to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 22. Verse 22. For as in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive. Very simple statement, but it's all-embracing, all-inclusive. It's inevitable that all Adam's descendants will die. But without changing gear, without changing breath, it's also inevitable that in Christ all will be made alive. And that will happen because God sacrificed His Son. And because He brought Him back and He came back to life again. Sometimes life can seem very difficult. The problems we go through can be very hard to take. And things in the world around us can look really, really black sometimes. So it's good to remember words like Romans 8, verse 18. Romans 8, verse 18. And just taking this one verse, it says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. So that's the overall perspective. It can be dark, it can be gloomy, it can be painful. No one wants children to suffer. No one wants children to die, or to be permanently handicapped, or to suffer traumas of one sort or another. It's a dreadful thing. It's very hard to justify that. It's very hard to see that from our short-term human standpoint and to say that's a good thing. I cannot say that's a good thing. Can you? I can't. And yet, we have to start from the point of view that God is all-powerful, that he knows what he's doing, and that when he intervened, he sent his own son to die. And no one expected that. And that has changed everything. Third point is this. Though it's hard to give an answer to these things, it's always good to maintain the big picture, to look forward, to see the future. God is in charge. He has a purpose. He is working things out for the best. And we will see that one day, as we've already seen in Romans. Things will work out. God's name will be glorified when people realize, wow, you took the most impossible, the most hopeless situation, and you turned it right round. And you did that. How do you suppose the angels in heaven keep glorifying God? Because they see him doing this. And they realize that is amazing. But to you and I, sadly, we don't see all that yet. So in the meantime, we have God's word. We have our relationship with God in Jesus through the Holy Spirit to sustain us, to give us hope. We have God's love in us. No, we can't give a complete answer. No, we can't stop the suffering. I wouldn't want for a moment to enter into argument with anyone who's gone through that experience. It's very difficult to understand. Some of God's ways are still a mystery. But we need to see the big picture. And we're working our way towards Isaiah 65, second last chapter of Isaiah. Isaiah 65, starting at verse 17. Verse 17, behold, I will create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create, for I will create Jerusalem to be a delight, and its people a joy. I will rejoice over Jerusalem and take delight in my people. The sound of weeping and crying will be heard in it no more. Never again will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not live out his years. Notice that never again will there be an infant who lives but a few days. Premature death in children will be abolished. It won't happen again. It will be brought to an end. Children will grow up. It goes on to say, an old man who doesn't live out his years, he who dies at 100 will be thought a mere youth. We have centenarians now. In those days, a centenarian will be nothing. He who fails to reach 100 will be considered accursed. They'll build houses and dwell in them. They'll plant vineyards and eat their fruit. No longer will they build houses and others live in them, or plant and others eat. For as the days of a tree will be the days of my people, my chosen ones will long enjoy the work of their hands. They will not toil in vain or bear children doomed to misfortune. That will end. For they will be a people blessed by the Lord, they and their descendants with them. So there is a wonderful future to look forward to. There is a good time to come when it will all be brought to an end. And it's good to remember that and to be sustained by that. But how do we cope with the difficult situation we live in today? With these difficult black days and the tragedies that come up, it seems, almost every day in the news. Well, God doesn't intervene to stop it. But he does encourage us, and he encourages all people if they are looking for that. 2 Corinthians chapter 1. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, starting at verse 3. Verse 3 of 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. Now, God doesn't stop the tragedies. That's part of his plan. But he does provide comfort for those who are suffering and who are looking for help. Who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. For just as the sufferings of Christ flow over into our lives, so also through Christ our comfort overflows. Those are words of comfort, and that tells us one of God's functions today. He comforts us. We live in this world of mankind, this world that's crazy, this world that's gone astray, this world that's broken down, and that doesn't really have much hope, frankly, in spite of man's best efforts. And so God is there to encourage us and to keep us going. And yet he provides comforts in other ways too. In Dunblane, many families suffered. The whole community suffered that tragedy back there. And yet there were two young boys in that school that day who took cover and who were not shot and who survived and came through. One of them worked hard and became famous. His name is Andy Murray. And he won Wimbledon. And I would like to think that God was comforting Dunblane and its people by showing that there was one of their children. And not only Andy, but his brother apparently played alongside him in a doubles match at Wimbledon this year. And his brother was also in the same school at the same time. And I can't help thinking that here was God's comfort and encouragement at work for the people of Dunblane. That he has given fame and honour to the town of Dunblane, to two of their children who were in that very school at the time of that shooting all those years back. It took a long time, it took many years, but God has all the time there is. If we're willing to wait, it will work out. It will work out for the best. I do hope and pray that none of us ever has to endure a tragedy involving our children. It's one of the worst things we can ever experience. And I do hope and pray we never have to. But we can remember that their angels always see God's face in heaven. Their angels always see God's face in heaven. God is there. He's watching over them. He's watching over us. So don't worry. Whatever happens, keep in contact with God. Keep praying. Trust him. He will work things out for the best. He will guide us, and it will be to his glory in the end.
Thank you, Gordon, for that message. I'd just like to just take this time out just to say thank you to all of the people who kind of do all the stuff in the background.